Go for it, Dave.
Oh, wow. We're already out?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Where were you guys?
For about a minute.
What, were you just having dead air?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, nobody else's mic works?
No.
Wow. Well, hey, that dead air brought to you by...
No, it was only for like a second.
Okay. Well, it's 8:02. I mistimed it. I was going potty.
Oh,
wow.
No.
Look at that. Wow. Time to save money at the pump. Hey, how about that? Text Dave to 83835 now to save a quarter a gallon on your second fill-up. Michael Duarte of NBC Sports LA is going to join us here in just a second. This happened Saturday night. Until Premier Boxing Champions began signing network TV deals a few years ago, boxing, as you know, meant pay-per-view, HBO, Showtime, and occasionally on ESPN. CBS had a Saturday primetime card just this last Saturday. Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia. I saw the fight. It was an okay fight. But both two undefeated fighters unifying a championship belt in the same class that Sugar Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns were. That got them a win for the evening. And they were going up against, amongst other things, the Bulls and the Clippers on ABC's Saturday night presentation of the NBA. Beat it pretty decently in the 18-49 demo, which is what's important these days to broadcasters, which I find interesting because boxing is an interesting – we're going to do a boxing segment here. But boxing, it has been on life support for a while, but these things are cyclical. I obviously have covered MMA for a long time. I talk about it. There was also a UFC fight, and it was a championship fight with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson facing Tyron Woodley on Saturday evening. There was a big fight that was another title fight that was or a title eliminator that was canceled that evening involving Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. I never get
exactly.
The name right.
Oh, wow.
I watched the UFC. I mean, I've been watching UFC since day one. I'm going to tell you right now, the UFC is in a lot of trouble. The UFC, ever since they got bought by the WBA, the new conglomerate, for $4 billion, has been, I don't want to say unwatchable, and if you're a huge MMA fan, you don't have to have a big name to have a big fight, have a good fight. And there were a couple of really good fights on the undercard. But the UFC has kind of dropped out. There's no drama. Conor McGregor's taken the year off, and he's made himself pretty much their only big draw.
He's bigger than the sport right now,
yeah.
And it's hurting the sport.
Terribly. Ronda Rousey being eliminated from anything and most likely will retire.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
How quickly that happened.
I mean, hot take here, but what a baby. You lose one fight, you disappear off the face of the earth, you quit.
She lost two. I mean, she lost her first one.
Yeah, but even after she lost her first one, she kind of disappeared for a while.
Was never the same.
To go from being the biggest, baddest thing on the planet, no one can beat you, you're unstoppable, you're invincible.
Yes.
Invincible. And you lose twice, and you know what? This isn't for me.
This is a deeper conversation that we don't have enough time for with Michael coming up. But I will predict right now on whatever the hell today is, March 7th, that I think at some point, we're going to see some sort of a documentary or a story told on Ronda Rousey. And I don't think
it's deeper than what we know.
Listen, Ronda Rousey, it's well documented. Her father committed suicide after a long bout with an illness. And she was raised by her mother, and she was a judo champion. Her mother was a judo champion. So, and Ronda Rousey was an Olympic judo champion or silver medalist, I believe. And I, you know, this is really tough stuff to speculate. So I'm trying to stand in front of Ronda Rousey, and I don't know all the facts. But if I'm a betting man, if I'm guessing, I think we're going to hear a story about a young lady who got into the scene, who had a tremendous amount of success in a short time in what was essentially a brand new sport. The women's division she fought in was created for her after
right.
Dana White for a long time said he didn't want to do women's MMA, and Gina Carano had left the sport, and Chris Cyborg couldn't stay off a drug test, and he didn't want any part of that. He found Ronda Rousey, who was attractive and who was a damned good fighter and a fantastic showman, whatever you want to call it, who could sell fights. Katie, what I think happened is I think you had somebody who played the role, who reveled in it, who got the limelight, the glamour, the money, the notoriety, and was built up as this Superman. And I think when she got beat, it came crashing down, and she should have left right then. But I think she was, by her camp, by the people that rely on her for income. You got to understand, fighters employ a lot of people that rely on you to pay their paychecks, and it's tough to tell them no.
You could be right, but I mean, I'm kind of with Nate here in the sense that, wow, you got beat. Like, you were, she was invincible. And to me, it kind of goes towards kind of everything that's going on right now with the premiere of this documentary for CSN, Tomboy, right? I said it last night at halftime with Doug Christie. The great thing about sports is that it teaches you that you're not always going to succeed. You're going to fail sometimes, but you have to be able to pick yourself up and keep working towards your goals. She got beat one time, Dave, and it derailed her in so many ways. But this is an interesting question. I've got to ask you, because we kind of discussed it a little bit after the Oscars the other day, and the OJ Made in America thing won the Oscar, and you were wondering, what is the next big sports documentary? Do you think this is one that might be on the ticket?
I think that eventually it will be. I think when everything calms down and Rhonda figures out what she wants to do, and I think when she comes out on the other side mentally, and if in fact she decides to open up about it and the people around her, I think that there are going to be a few documentaries, not just on Ronda Rousey, but on Dana White, on the underbelly of the UFC, on how these fighters are treated, on what they go. I think there is a whole treasure trove of documentaries that are going to tell some behind the scenes story of mixed martial arts and Ronda Rousey specifically, that I think are going to blow some minds. Again, I could be wrong. I don't have inside knowledge. I know a few people that know a few people in her camp, and you hear things. But yes, I think it's easy and understandable for people to look at Ronda Rousey's loss and say exactly what Nate said. And Nate may be 100% correct on this. I don't think it was the loss that did it. I think the loss was the flame to the gasoline on somebody who was already very, very mentally troubled. And Ronda came out and said in the one interview she did, I think it was with Ellen, it might have been with the paper, that she was having suicidal thoughts.
Right.
She needed to get out of it. Some people might write that off. I don't with Ronda Rousey. I think you have a very, very mentally troubled person who needs to get the hell away from the sport and away from all the people that know, quote unquote, what's best for her. And she needs to go somewhere where people don't want a piece of her. Because I think when you talk about the machine chewing people up, I think nobody got chewed up more, and part of it's her fault, than Ronda Rousey. He works for NBC, does sports down there for NBC LA. Nice enough to join us right now. It is Michael Duarte. Michael, it's Dave, Katie, Nate. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Good morning.
Good morning,
Sacramento.
Yeah, well, you know, Sacramento and L.A. don't always get along, but I appreciate you helping us bridge the gap here. Maybe some peace talks coming up in the future. Probably not. But when it comes to Lakerland, we rarely talk about all things Lakers up here for obvious reasons. But there's been some interesting things going on down there. We hear about the Bus family and a possible coup, and then the Bus brothers saying there was no coup and they support Jeannie. We just wanted a little bit of clarity from you. What the heck is going on down in L.A.?
Yeah, you talk about that bridge between Sacramento and L.A., and with the situation of the Kings and Lakers, that bridge is a lot shorter. You guys don't happen to have the Game of Thrones theme there ready for playback, because that's what's going on down here in Lakerland.
Wow.
That's the only way to say it. Brothers and sisters basically, you know, publicly having a family divorce in front of all the eyes out here in Los Angeles. Now, it's very complicated to kind of go through what happened. Obviously, we all know that Jeannie ousted her brother Jim as president of basketball operations and implemented Magic Johnson in that role. And he's now taken over basketball operations. That was 2 days before the trade deadline. And ironically, we didn't hear a whole lot from Jim right after that happened. Well, that's because of this coup you guys were talking about, where he got with his brother Johnny, and they decided, well, hey, every year there's a meeting. And right now the Lakers are in a family trust, all six children of Jerry Buss are in this trust. They all have an 11% ownership stake of the Lakers, making up the majority ownership stake of 66%. And of those trusts, there's three trustees, Johnny, Jim, and Jeannie. And every year they meet, when you own like a company or corporation, to meet and elect a board of directors. And all three of them are always on the board of directors, with Jeannie the controlling director, and therefore the controlling owner of the team. which was the stipulation in the late Jerry Buss's will. So what Johnny and Jim did was send a message out through email to the other directors saying that when the vote comes up, they don't want to elect Jeannie. And they offered up four different names that did not include Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when Jeannie found this out, she immediately lawyered up and sent a message, at least that we've now seen in court documents that have become public, that she said Jim was unfit to run the Lakers, and that's why he was ousted as president of the Lakers. So even though now it went to court and the Buss brothers, Jim and Johnny, have now backpedaled, as you said, and said that, no, there wasn't a coup, and then now they're saying that they weren't trying to do anything, and they've withdrawn their case. These now court documents becoming public saying that Jim was unfit to run the team is pretty telling. The restraining order that Jeannie filed that's now been withdrawn is pretty telling. And the fact that she and her lawyers are moving forward with a hearing in May tells us that this is far from over.
Michael, you said that he was unfit, and that's what she said. Was the implication there that he was just unfit in terms of running the business side, or is it unfit fit from a mental capacity?
That's the question we're kind of asking ourselves down here. She runs the business side, so it's the basketball side. That she's saying he's unfit to run. Now, is he unfit to run it because in the eyes of the fans and in her eyes, he's run it into the ground these past four seasons? Or is he unfit to run it because something that we don't know about? Like you said, is there, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to speculate, but is there some sort of outside issues that have hindered him to do his job, whether it's mental or physical or, I don't know, drinking, something like that? We don't want to speculate, but those, when you hear the words unfit, you think of something like that.
Now, Michael, you said that the brothers kind of walked it back too, and it was weird the way they did it. It was like a convoluted explanation that basically made it sound like, hey, it's just a misunderstanding. Could you kind of explain that a little bit further, and then tell me if you actually believe that, or if that was just public by them to make it not look as bad?
I think absolutely it's public to make it not look as bad. As you said, their lawyers, the lawyer who represents the Buss brothers, Johnny and Jim, has been the one who's been publicly trying to walk this back. They withdrew the case. Once Jeannie tried to get a restraining order, they withdrew anything that would become legal of this matter to have either of them ousted. They withdrew their even plea or attempt to get her removed as one of the directors or the board of directors on the Lakers organization. And then they're saying, as far as what their lawyer is saying, well, they just voted her 2 days before this court date happened where Jeannie filed the restraint. They just voted her as one of the board of directors. So how could they want her not a board of director if they voted for her in this meeting that was held? That's what the attorney's saying. Now, what I think happened is when Jim was ousted as the president of basketball operations, I think he had some hurt feelings there. I think it kind of came pretty suddenly. It happened after the trade deadline. And that's something else that no one's talking about. When Magic Johnson took over, not many of us here in the LA media who cover the Lakers were surprised by that decision, but it was the timing that surprised us. And it happened about 24 hours, and you guys know this, after DeMarcus Boogie Cousins was traded. And there was rumors and rumblings that the Lakers were in talks with those trades and that apparently Vlade Divac and the Kings, quote-unquote, wanted too much from the Lakers. Well, considering what the Kings got in return for Boogie Cousins, we kind of are confused about that here in Los Angeles. And what we have heard internally through sources was that Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak, who were involved in the conversations with the Kings and Vlade Divac for DeMarcus Cousins, did not inform Jeannie or Magic at all of any of this. So if there was a possibility of getting DeMarcus Cousins in Los Angeles, Jeannie and Magic were not privy to any of that knowledge or what it would have taken or what players or picks would have been involved in that. And I think that kind of got both of them upset, and that's why they rushed to this decision, which thereby led to Jim getting pretty upset about this from his sister being ousted. And I think that's when he probably got with Johnny and said, how can we turn the tables on her?
Michael Duarte joining us, NBC LA. You know, the Lakers' involvement in that Cousins trade is interesting, and I hope comes out someday. And I know it's tough because you never want to say if a trade's not consummated that a player was available. I know the Lakers were involved in some aspect, and I know talking to people in DeMarcus Cousins' camp, there were a lot of them just an hour before the trade was consummated. I asked one specifically, where do you think you're going if you get traded? And they said the Lakers. They thought the Lakers were going to grab DeMarcus, so there was some sort of conversation there. The reports we heard, and again, these are reports from sources, quote-unquote, was that the sticking point was the Lakers did not want to include Brandon Ingram in any trade for DeMarcus Cousins. Was that what you heard as well?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. My understanding was Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss told Lottie Divots and the Kings, at least like you said, we're hearing from sources that the Kings wanted Brandon Ingram in any deal, and they said Brandon Ingram is untouchable. That could be where Magic Johnson says, how can anybody on this current roster be untouchable when Boogie Cousins is the one coming back?
Michael, I got to ask you, I want to follow up on something you said about the whole thing with the trade and how it went down, and that it was surprising for people in L.A. that the timing of Magic taking over and Jim being out. I find that hard to believe, because it seemed to me like Magic Johnson had been publicly advocating for him to take over that job since early February.
Correct. It all happened really fast. He came on as an advisor to Genie. That was his role. And, you know, he still had a lot of other business ties. He's a part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's a part owner of the Los Angeles Sparks. He has a lot of other business ventures out there. So we thought here in L.A., and especially as you guys heard him publicly saying, well, I don't really know what my role is, but I expect to be conducted on all decisions. And then he kept saying over and over again, there needs to be one voice in the room as far as the basketball decisions for the Lakers, and that he would like to be that voice. Well, that was the telltale sign that that's ultimately what probably was going to happen. We thought, you know, with a little over 20 games left in the season heading into the All-Star break, it would come after the season. That would when the move would take place. It was not unexpected that Magic would take over in that role. It was unexpected that it happened literally 2 days before the trade deadline.
You know, I thought it was telling, because we actually played the Lakers right before the trade deadline, and we were down there and I was in the media scrum, and Luke Walton was asked specifically about everything that was going on. And he said, Michael, he said, well, I'm focusing on coaching right now, but at some point I'll sit down and I'll talk to Magic about what's going on. And he alluded to the fact that that would take place during the All-Star break, which I thought was interesting and a little bit telling, saying, okay, well, something's going to happen here a lot sooner than we expected.
Right. And I still think that if, you know, if they had just shared information with Genie and Magic regarding at least the talks they were having regarding DeMarcus Cousins, that maybe this doesn't happen when it happens. We were told by sources that Genie was fuming after they didn't consult her or Magic. Now, we were also told that Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak were consulting like lower level people in the basketball side. Scouts and people who are there at the practice facility every day, assistant coaches. So they're upset saying, how can you go, you know, below us to ask for advice on should they trade Brandon Ingram for a Boogie Cousins deal without going to Genie or Magic? And that was when she finally pulled the trigger.
Speculate, knowing Genie Buss and knowing Magic Johnson and their attitude on running this team, if no deal had been consummated at the All-Star break with the New Orleans Pelicans, do you feel like the Lakers would have made a legit run at DeMarcus Cousins this summer? And do you think some of those restrictions on who the Lakers would be willing to give up would be more favorable for the Kings as opposed to when Mitch Kupchak was involved?
Yeah, I think so, because there's two things twofold here. One, I think Magic wants to get back, you know, stars. He keeps saying they're one or two stars away from competing. So in his mind, DeMarcus Cousins is a star. A guy like Paul George is a star. At the same time, Magic is seeing where the team was at right before the trade deadline and the All-Star break, and looking at the record and saying, and he's publicly stated through his Twitter account and in various interviews, that he's a proponent of tanking to get, you know, in this case, to get that top three draft pick that is unprotected when to go to the 76ers. So I definitely think they would have been in on DeMarcus Cousins in the offseason. And once they know where they are in the draft, or if they got to keep that pick, now that pick becomes an asset and a top three asset, whether it's Fulk up in Washington or Lonzo Ball at UCLA, then those become assets for those types of players. And now you can make a lot more moves. I still think that you might see some sort of Paul George rumbling start back up once the season's over and once that draft lottery announcement comes out. If the Lakers do indeed get to keep that top three pick, now all of a sudden you're going to see a lot of people maybe wanting to trade with the Lakers.
Last thing for you, Michael. We were talking before you came on about Ronda Rousey, and we were tying that into with O.J. winning the O.J. movie winning the Oscar, how sports documentaries are just going to go, the market's going through the roof. And we were talking about things that would make good sports documentaries going on in the world right now. And that's why we were talking about Ronda. But when you really think about it, not only is it Los Angeles where they've made a movie or two in the past, but this whole saga and everything you've talked about and what we really haven't touched on is on top of all of this family, you know, Knox Landing dynasty stuff, power struggling going on, you could also boil a little bit of this down to a love story gone awry. How much of this has sprouted out of the Jeannie Buss Phil Jackson breakup in December?
Oh, wow.
And going back really to if Jeannie had her way, wouldn't Phil Jackson be running this team and coaching this team right now?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. When you said the love story gone awry, I was hoping that that's what you were inferring. you know, and that's what I was going to say. There's a long history of family tension between Jim Buss and Jeannie Buss dating back to that huge move when, you know, Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak trade for Dwight Howard. They trade for Steve Nash. They've created this you know, super team to compete with the Lakers. You had Kobe, Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard, and Steve Nash all on the same team, and Mike Brown coaching. Well, Mike Brown, as you know, lasted four games. And then there's this coaching vacancy. And Jeannie at the time is engaged to Phil Jackson. They're, you know, hanging out in Manhattan Beach. And Phil gets a call. They approach him with this. And Phil's understanding of that call from Jim and Mitch on the call was he would have the weekend to think about it and give him their decision on whether he was interested or not in coming back and coaching the team. Well, before he can even give them decision, Jim pulls the rug out from under him and hires Mike D'Antoni.
And wow.
We were told at sources at the time, whether it's jealousy or what, Jim just did not want Phil Jackson anywhere near the team on the basketball side again. And a lot of that stems from the fact that this is Jeannie's fiance, this is Jeannie's boyfriend, and maybe that would give him more power or her more power because he's implemented in there. Absolutely, she would want him there, and absolutely she's publicly stated that he would be a great executive for the Lakers as well. So, yeah, I absolutely think that if maybe Jim was a little more understanding or took the personal side out of it, maybe you would have seen Phil Jackson coach, maybe you would have seen him as an executive, and this whole thing could have been a lot different. But this has been going back, this Jim Jeannie feud has been going back for many, many years. And it's now coming to a head, and this is just, again, speculation, but I wouldn't be surprised as more and more comes out, and now it's going to court in May, that this ultimately, not now, maybe not in the next year or two, but it ultimately could lead to a sale of the team.
Wow. Great Man. Stuff from Michael Duarte. You can get him on Twitter, Michael J. Duarte, D-U-A-R-T-E. Writes sports for NBC LA, covers all the LA teams, and tremendous info on that whole crazy situation we'll stay tuned on in LA. Thanks, Michael. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks, Michael. You know, I'm fine with all of this going on in
Me
LA.
Me too.
I'm okay with it.
I've said this multiple times, but like a lot of rivalries for my teams, like I hate them, but they're a necessary function. You know, like you look forward to those games. I've felt for years and years about the Lakers, like I would be just fine as an NBA fan if they ceased to exist. Just fine if I never had to see it again.
You know what's funny about this, you guys, though? You asked that question, Dave, and I just Googled Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss to see what would come up. An article from 2014 comes up from Darren Revelle. Talking about the NBA addressing the relationship and putting parameters on it because of how powerful that couple would be. So I wonder if that even ever would have been allowed by the NBA.
Phil's going back to L.A. That's what I think is going to happen. I think Phil's going back to L.A., and you got Magic and Luke Walton in there. Somebody's going to move aside. Someone's going to get displaced.
Do you want him now after failure in New York?
Well, I do. Because I hate the Lakers, but I think Lakers fans will, too. He's a walking god. Kawhi Leonard had a great game last night, an even better finish, but then after the game, he didn't get the treatment that you'd think a game-winning player would. We'll get into that. Your phone calls at 339- 11:40. And hey, so much more coming up on The Drive. Sports 11:40. Sammy Hagar tickets next. Wow. KHDK. Big half hour for you. Lots of fun and prizes. I like to call them bribes. You listen. We give you stuff. Later on in this segment, we'll give you a chance to win Sammy Hagar tickets. So stay tuned there. We also have the Bearco moment of the game. $50 Redwood gift certificate to Bearco and a Sacramento Kings prize pack. We'll tell you about Kawhi Leonard, what he dealt with after the game in a second. Let's go to the phones, though. Robert, let's talk to the people. You're on The Drive.
Oh, hey there, Dave. I haven't talked to you for a long time.
Hello, Robert. Haven't talked to you in a long time.
Yeah, you know, I'd kind of like to talk about the state of the Kings, and it's just very, very disappointing, this current version of the team. Kind of like to draw a parallel between the state of the Kings and the state of the morning show. You know, you, Dave, have a lifetime pass due to the fact that you saved the Kings single-handedly.
Oh, thank you. Tell my bosses.
But I got to tell you, you know, I don't know, this whole show doesn't really seem to be working with, I don't know, who it was, Nick and Katie. And,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think maybe the better name for this would be The Dive rather
yeah.
than The Drive.
Right.
I guess that's what's happening with their ratings.
Yeah, they're way down. I mean, it's like actually negative.
This is a friend of yours.
I have no idea who this is. And honestly, I'm glad you're talking about this, Robert, because I've been wanting to say this for a long time. Really, none of us get along. We don't really even – we come in every day. It's almost a fist fight nonstop. And honestly, if it wasn't for my parents, I don't know who'd be listening.
Well, I don't know that it matters if you guys get along, but it's really just bad radio.
It is. Robert, are you married?
Well, we do appreciate him contributing. Like,
I do.
Bringing the content
Robert, are you
level up,
are you
know?
Married?
Absolutely.
Really?
29 years.
No. Come on.
You didn't expect that, did
There's no way anybody could put up with you for 29 years.
Dave.
Robert, come on.
Listen, you and I go back a ways. I loved you.
Where do we go back to?
I loved you with Don. I loved you with Deuce. But this show, it's just not good, man.
Why
are you listening and talking to us? I don't get that.
Well, I had to share my feelings with Dave.
Why?
Special place in my heart for him.
No. Why would you, if a show is something that you don't see, I'm supposed to hang up on this guy and move on or dump the call, and I can't do that. If a show is something that you don't enjoy, Robert, why would you listen to it and participate in it when there are so many different options out there for your listening pleasure?
Hello?
Hello. Robert?
Yeah, I'm here.
Why would you listen?
Well, the truth is, Dave, I really don't listen very often.
Then why would you participate?
Then why would you point right now?
Why would you participate? I mean, I'm not. Listen, everybody can have their opinion. If you think this show is a turd on ice, dude, bro, all go for it. Honestly, honest to God, whether you hate me or Katie or Nate or all three of us,
no, Nick, it's Nick.
You, Dave, I told you that.
No, I got you, but I'm saying, and
you just apparently hate Nate and I.
Yeah, he's trying to kiss my ass and be friends with me. Here's the thing. If you don't like it, don't listen, don't participate. That's like the guy going to the party in sweatpants and bitching about the beer when he wasn't invited.
Well, Dave, like I said, I've got love for you. You know, you and I go back a long way. But these other guys, these clowns, I mean, they're just not good on the radio.
How are they clowns?
Dude, get the hell off our show.
Robert,
like, I honestly don't understand what the point of this is.
I'm going to kill him now. Here's the thing. Robert's trying to do the divide and conquer. Here's the simple thing.
Divide and conquer.
What did I say?
No, that's what you said. I'm just.
Here's the thing. There are people out there that can't stand me. Absolutely can't stand me because of I have a lisp. I can't talk. I look like a failed science experiment. I'm pompous. I'm an at whatever it may be. Who love it. That happens. You can't expect everybody to like what's on your radio or your TV or whatever it may be at all times. There's just no such thing. And
here's the thing, though. This is what I don't understand about people. It's okay if people don't like me
absolutely.
Or Nate or you. That's fine. Don't listen to our show. But I don't go to your job and tell you that I don't like how you do your job.
Exactly.
Like, what's the difference?
Nobody goes to anybody's job and, you know, he's trying to come to our job and knock the mic out of my mouth. And I actually, weirdly enough, am drawn more to the criticism, which is not the way it should be.
It's human nature.
You're drawn more to the criticism than you are to that. But you try to come in, and then most of the time when a call like that comes in, right, here's what's going to happen. Number one, generally, you either get rid of the call immediately or you dump it. And I certainly don't like it when – I mean, listen, we all – truth be told, we actually all love each other. We fight like cats and dogs, but we are – we really do enjoy each other on the show. But when this stuff happens, everybody gets defensive. You're supposed to cut the guy off. And then that breeds people saying, well, hold on, I actually love the show. You guys are great. That guy was an ass. Nobody wants any part of that. But to ignore that, I can't handle that because, as I said at the top of the show, actually 7 a.m., we have a contract with the listeners. Now the segment's going completely off the rails, Robert. We have a contract with the listeners. There's a trust there. We come in and we do what we're supposed to do every single day. And hopefully at the end of the day, you learn something and you're a little bit more informed. And if not, there's 90 other things for you to listen to on the radio. I was saying at 7 a.m. that we don't look at numbers, but I got some shoved in my face yesterday. And you know what? They're awesome. And we appreciate it. And we never take for granted that you guys are going to work to start your day. And you could be listening to a podcast, another radio station, your iPod, whatever it may be. But for some weird reason, you guys listening right now choose to listen to our dumb asses every single morning, and that never, ever, ever gets taken for granted. So if you're a guy Robert that can't that isn't into it, God bless you for it. But then just don't be into it.
I'll give it to Robert, though. Like, mostly people troll you anonymously on Twitter and stuff like that. He felt the need, for whatever reason, to call up us at work and say, hey, I don't like you guys. So congratulations. I hope you have a great day. I mean, good for you. I don't know if that was on your to-do list today, if it makes you feel better now. Like, that's cool. I'm pretty sure Nate and I can take it, Dave, but man, you're the clown.
Listen, if there's one truth that we learned out of Robert's call, it's this. Nobody likes Nate.
It's Nick.
You're right.
Nick Goodyear. Hey, Joe, see what happens? Matt George, right? When you come back. You see what happens, Matt? You come back for spring training. We didn't get any of those calls when Chuck was on.
I had the hate caravan coming back.
Yeah.
By the way, are you and your girlfriend still together?
Barely.
Joe, you're on the drive.
Hey, Dave. Hey. 88. I love the show.
Thank you.
That's kind of you.
When I listen to the show.
It's very nice.
And what I learned today was that I like Vladdy as it is, but now I know that he's basically taken the wheels off the bus in L.A., and
the long con.
Who in the world would want him to trade DMC to LA anyway? I mean, we would hate that. You don't want to see DeMarcus coming in here four times a year. I mean, so I'm happy of the decision.
We still got New Orleans, though.
If the deal wasn't as good as the deal he would have got with LA, I'm happy about it. Yeah.
You know what, honestly, Joe, and
who knew Vlade was playing a long game? I love it.
I don't like putting voice to thought. But I'll tell you right now, if DeMarcus Cousins doesn't re-sign with the New Orleans Pelicans, I think the top favorite by a long shot is the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm scared to
death.
There is
this school of thought, though. There's this school of thought, though. A lot of people think that a team, is no matter who it is never going to be able to win with DeMarcus Cousins. So if that is the case, wouldn't you want him to go to the Lakers?
Yes. Have him. Take him.
If
have fun with
case,
that.
If that's the case, then go for it. Seeing him in purple and gold, he got trolled last night in Los Angeles. We have sound of that.
Or it was in Utah.
Oh, was it in Utah? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, that was in Utah?
No. The heckling was in Los Angeles, but their game was in Utah.
So that was 2 days ago. Okay.
See, that's why people...
Oh, man, in a just world, that happens in Salt Lake City.
Honestly, yeah. We got a break, but Robert's right. See, Robert's absolutely correct. We put out no good information on the show.
And we're a bunch of clowns.
That's why people hate us. We'll take a break, but we'll bribe you with Sammy Hagar tickets right now. 11th caller, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. You get Sammy Hagar tickets this summer up in Lake Tahoe, a phenomenal place to see him. We'll take a break. We're back in a couple on the drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Bearco moment of the game in just a second. When I first looked at this tweet, I didn't know what it was because I was looking at it during the show. It's actually a pretty damn cool tweet. Torrey Smith is no longer a San Francisco 49er, and he sent this tweet out yesterday evening. Can someone connect me with an organization that helps folks transition in the Bay? That's what I read at first and was like, what? Wait, what? Listen to this tweet, though. Can someone connect me with an organization that helps folks transition in the Bay? I have some beds and tables that could help someone. And then reading on beyond that, what he was referring to is in the Bay Area, people that are trying to get on their feet, are trying to get their lives together. Because Torrey was released by the Niners and knows he's going to move, he's going to be giving away a lot of his stuff to people that actually need it. And then I'm looking at the replies, and this is where social media is at its best. People directing Torrey to all kinds of different organizations designed specifically for that, to give people that really need a hand to hand. And Torrey Smith's well known to be a pretty involved guy in the community. Say what you want about the football decision, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with a team like the 49ers giving up on Torrey Smith. Not that he had a great year last year by any stretch of the imagination, but that's a hell of a good story, and that's the type of stuff I don't think gets shared enough. Dave, Katie, and Nick will take you all the way until it's not going to get old for a while. Kawhi Leonard, as you know, last night took center stage in that win over the Houston Rockets in San Antonio. 39 points, a 6.5-second sequence of brilliance on both ends of the floor that gave them the 112-110 victory, and continues to put him smack dab in the middle of the MVP conversation. He was going to go to the podium to talk to the media, but he never showed up, and the media was wondering where Kawhi Leonard was. Well, it turns out the NBA decided to pop a drug test on him. The problem was, and the reason why there was such a delay on top of that, is that, I don't know, Kawhi Leonard had just participated in a pretty hectic physical activity. He was dehydrated.
Yeah.
So Kawhi had to drink fluids in order to create the ability to participate in the drug test that the NBA tests players randomly four times during the season and twice during the off season. So
fitting that it came after his, you know, and this is such a fun time of year for individual performance, because with the MVP race so close, it's like this time of year, every night, one of the top candidates makes a case for themselves. And every morning we show up here going, well, how could you look past Kawhi Leonard? Did you see what he did in the last six? You know, and tonight it'll be Russell Westbrook or James Harden or whoever turning in a triple-double.
We've all established that Russell Westbrook is not a superstar in this league. He is not an MVP candidate.
Katie Cuban?
Okay?
Is that Katie Cuban talking right now?
Oh, my God. What is Mark Cuban smoking? If Russell Westbrook was on his team, can we all just concede the fact that he would totally be singing a different tune?
He'd be caping for him as the MVP all over every medium that exists.
He'd be a Russ stan.
Mm-hmm. He said that he's not a superstar.
Yeah, okay.
He's not a superstar, so he's not qualified to be eligible for the MVP race, which you're averaging a triple-double. That hasn't been done in decades.
I don't know.
If he wasn't on that team, they wouldn't even qualify for D-League play.
Russell Westbrook, I mean, aside from, like, the physical skill, you talk about a superstar. Like, I don't know that there are a lot of guys out there that are going to be able to meet his recognizability and, like, his and likability is not the word, because he's polarizing. But his
winning is what makes him a superstar, apparently.
Hey, listen, we are going to have an extended MVP conversation. We'll put that on the schedule tomorrow. Nate and I were talking. Katie is in Denver right now. Nate and I were talking before the show today about this. And I think we both kind of agreed. It's good sports talk radio when you disagree. We both agree that there should be a rule. If you average a triple-double in the NBA, you're the MVP.
And there should be a rule?
If there's more than one guy averaging a triple-double in the NBA, then they have to split it or thumb wrestle or something.
Fight, maybe?
Right.
Thumb wrestle.
My rule is, if you average a triple-double, you're the MVP. Sorry. I mean, that's just how it should be.
Yeah. It's not easy. It doesn't happen.
We'll talk about that tomorrow. Also, we wanted to get to this sound of DeMarcus Cousins being heckled. This will springboard a whole different conversation about heckling athletes. We'll get to that in a second. But I have a follow-up for you, Nick, on Tom Brady's prepared meal subscription business. The old Purple Carrot TB12 meals that will go for $78 a week. That gives you six meals. They will be higher protein, gluten-free, and limited in soy and refined sugar. None of the meals will contain recipes with dairy, eggs, seafood, meat, or processed foods, and perhaps taste.
So basically, this is the most expensive produce you can get.
Katie, sample meals, because I know you're a foodie, include a ramen bowl with charred broccolini and gingered amaranth.
For $13.
What the hell is amaranth? Doesn't that sound like a birthstone?
Ambulance. it's what you call when you're hurt and you can't drive yourself to the hospital.
I need an amaranth.
Yeah.
You'll also get crispy turnip cakes with quinoa, tabbouleh, and za'atar yogurt.
God. That sounds like self-induced torture.
Well,
Who does that?
Listen to Purple Carrot founder and CEO Andy Levin. Every meal that is designed is approved by Tom and his team, and Tom will get a box of meals to his home that is exactly what the people will get. Purple Carrot has adopted the phrase, this is perfect, Matt, eat like a goat.
Oh my God.
Double meaning, guys. It's not just eat like the greatest of all time, but also you're literally, and I'm not lying about this.
This isn't true, though. Goats eat everything. You're so limited with the Purple Carrot.
This references a goat's plant-based diet.
Oh, Lord.
Finally, the CEO said, roughly 75% of those that order with us are female.
Oh.
We think having Tom will make it more likely that we'll get some more men subscribing because they feel that connection to him. That being said, there's a lot of women out there that want their significant other to be like Tom, too.
Oh, my gosh. Gross. I don't know who the CEO is, but I can almost guarantee you he has a comb-over.
His name should be Tainty McGillicuddy because that's how he comes off.
Like, based strictly on, not just on the meals you described, but of all the things they're saying publicly, I think it's safe to say, guys, that Purple Carrot is out to trigger your gag reflex.
Somebody texted earlier and said, if it's Purple Carrot and you order from them late at night, would you call it a fruity call? But a carrot's not a fruit, so...
It's so close, though.
It is.
You know, it's on the verge.
All right. Katie's theme song playing, so we'll take the break for the day here.
For the day, yeah.
Bearco moment of the game, 339-1140. We'll give you the 11th caller. We'll give you the prizes should you, in fact, get it correctly. We'll end on this note, guys. Nate and Katie, I don't ever call in, but I wanted to call in after Robert ticked me off so bad. You guys are the best part of the morning. So this is the best version of the morning show in years and years. Just want you to know that there are people out here that really do appreciate the show and appreciate Nate and Katie. I love listening every single morning, and I love to hate Dave. So there you go.
Why, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim.
I love when my mom texts in.
That was my mom. Don't lie. Let's see. Jim Rome is next. The Lowdown will be on today, noon to 3. Join the boys there. And then 3 to 7, our other boys, Grant and Doug Christie. That's all for us. For Matt George, Kevin Sheritz, Katie Christensen, Nick Goodyear, I'm Carmichael Dave, the guy you love to hate. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. right here on your proud home of the Sacramento Kings, Sports 1140 KHTK.
Weehaw!